Previously on Paranormal Almanac.
Welcome to Paranormal Almanac with your host, Kurt Sand.
The conclusion to Paranormal West Virginia.
That's right. Hey, howdy, hi, and welcome to another edition of Paranormal Almanac. And on this week's episode, we're going to continue or finish or do more of Paranormal West Virginia. I almost forgot for a second that it's Paranormal West Virginia, because you know what? West Virginia has a lot of paranormal stuff. But first, as always, we've got shout-outs. That's right. Shout-outs going out to Doogie Hoare, Mike G., Tracy Ryden. That's Tracy Bellanger. Ryden, Jeff, Brenda, Richard, Logan, Lori, Alec, Roger Funk, Karen, Duran, Lori, Rebecca, and Stephen Scher. Hey, howdy, hi. Gina, Jennifer, Heather G., your friendly neighborhood skinwalker. Zeus, what's it? Nico, Sharon the Mouse. Hey, howdy, hi. Mark and Tina. Tortuga, Mike from Jersey, Jay Bizzle, Andy, Tracy, Virginia. That's the other Tracy, the Tracy Treasure Hunter. Virginia, Tony the Magician, Jason, Vicky, Crow, Lobito Works, Glacier Main, Isabel, Jen, Stacy, Amber, Tracy, Kelly Joe, Menace the Beast, Kick-Ass Magic Robot Webcomic. Please go check out Kick-Ass Magic Robot Webcomic. It's freaking awesome. Sandy, Paige, Couch, Batman 666, Scott. That's Scott A. Andrea, Melody, Vanessa, Marisol, Liam, Becca, Jake, Charlotte, the Beasties, Elizabeth, Sherry, Art Muffin, Tim, Kenneth, Ricky, Ricardo, Alexandra, George, Zozo the Demon, Hayden, Cindy, Ashley, Carrie, Robin, Will, Lauren, Russell, Isabel, Audra, Dorian, Cindy, Paula, Jerry, Jeff T. Hey, howdy, hi, buddy. Joe, Lawrence, Melissa, the Lawrence Strong. Hey, howdy, hi. Veronica, Autumn, J. Mark, Carolyn, Ryan and Milena want to play Pathfinder. I want to play Pathfinder. Someone play Pathfinder with me. That sounds freaking awesome. Jade, Nanashi, Todd, Jamie, and Elijah Hendrickson, Dan, Laura Pitts, and the one, the only gamer fan. That's right. With two special shout-outs, as always, to Joe Teague and to my boy Stitch. Boy, do I miss them both. Let's see. We have merch. Let me do the merch real quick. Head on over to tpublic.com/stores/paranormal-almanac. That's tpublic.com/stores/paranormal-almanac for all your merch needs. And there is a crap ton of them on there. And I mean a crap ton of them on there. Please go check it out if you can. If you want to support the show and you can't be a patron for whatever reason, but you want to wear some merch or a sticker, put a sticker on a car or a guitar or a bus or, I don't know, you just want to, you know, vandalize some public property with one of the Paranormal Almanac stickers. I don't judge. Go for it. In fact, take a picture of it if you do that. Don't do that. But if you do, take a picture of it. Buy all that shit on, buy all that stuff on Patreon. That's right. I'm trying desperately to reduce the amount of swear words and then eventually just bleep them all out. But I got to get a good bleep sound effect. And I keep forgetting to look up swear bleep sound effect. All right, let's try this one. It's all right. It's not great. No, it sounds like it's more like an emergency alert. Let's try this one. Oh, hey, Rum. Rum wants to say hi real quick in the episode. Hi, this early in the episode. Good morning, my girl. Not good morning. It's almost the afternoon, but hey. Nope, that sounds worse. All right. You know what? This isn't fun for anybody. I'll find a good bleeping sound effect and I'll start using it, is what I'm going to say. But yeah, I'm going to try and make these shows less adult. I don't know. Not the right word. Less PG-13 and more PG is what I'm trying to get at. But first, as always, we must have some paranormal news.
Have you ever seen Bigfoot riding on the back of Nessie while being sucked up into the sky by a UFO?
Sucked off by a UFO? Yes.
Choir of ghost cats being led by a black-eyed child? Is this story true? Well, there's only one place you're going to find out.
Get all my news from Paranormal News. Listen carefully for the clues. The stories are strange and bizarre. It makes you wonder just who we are. This is Paranormal News. Paranormal News.
There's something in the shadows.
Take it away, Kurt.
Thank you, Buzz. Love you, buddy. All right. I almost forgot one thing. Before we get to paranormal news, if you want to send me a card, a letter, or stuff like the hand of fate, whatever. I have a lot of people requesting my address again, and I apologize. I don't do it well enough or often enough. You can mail me. You can send me stuff, whatever, at Paranormal Almanac, Kurt Sandvig, 1812 West Burbank Boulevard, number 7102, and that's in Burbank, California, 91506. Once again, that's Paranormal Almanac or Kurt Sandvig, 1812 West Burbank Boulevard, number 7102, Burbank, California, 91506. And I love receiving mail, and the packages and the amazing gifts that you guys have sent me, I cannot thank you all enough. And I don't do it often enough, and I apologize. So that's where you can send them. But for paranormal news, we got to get to the first story, which I lost my space because I was looking, lost my place because I was looking for the address. So, here we go. The first story, can you tell I'm like trying to, I'm bantering right now. The first story in paranormal news. A woman found dead in a church with no blood in her body may have been a TikToker hunting for ghosts, police say. That's right. What a great headline. A French woman was found, I mean, not for her. That was a terrible headline for her, but I mean, what a cool sounding headline. A French woman was found dead in an abandoned church in northern Italy after a ghost hunting trip. Police are investigating it. If her murder or her death was a result of a TikTok challenge or murder. Witnesses reported seeing the woman dressed as a vampire with a man hours before her death. Kurt here, I'm going to say he did it. So a French woman embarked on a day trip to northern Italy for what appears to have been a ghost hunting trip. She never made it home. Sorry. The body of the unnamed woman, 22, was found over the weekend in an abandoned church where she had been stabbed to death and drained of blood. Now investigators are trying to figure out if she was a TikToker who was part of a ghost hunting stunt, or if her death was something more sinister, such as consented sacrificial death. The woman had traveled from her hometown near Lyon, France, to La Salle in Aosta Valley, Italy. I'm sure I got none of that right. And I'm pretty sure I got Lyon, France right. And had informed her family of plans to find, quote, a haunted house believed to contain ghosts. Well, that's what haunted houses contain. The journey to the Italian town is estimated to take just over 1 hour from Lyon when driving, according to a Google Maps estimate. Okay, thank you. Witnesses in the town interviewed by police said they had noticed the woman was accompanied by a man hours before her death. Both had been dressed as vampires. One witness described the woman as emaciated and looked like a walking corpse, while the man was described as having dark hair and olive skin. Yep, that's a vampire right there. A camping knife had been used to stab the woman, causing her to bleed to death. She also had two gunshot wounds on her neck and one on her abdomen. Holy crap! Which police told CNN may have been inflicted after she was already dead. There was no sign of a struggle, though police noted that some of the blood from the floor had been removed when they had arrived to inspect the scene. Police are still searching for the man who was with her, the outlet added. One theory that investigators are considering is that the woman's death was a result of a consented murder or a sacrifice. The woman also may have been taking part in a ghost hunting challenge that's popular among TikTokers in France. The report did not mention what evidence the police had to link the death to the social media platform, but in a statement to Business Insiders, a spokesperson for TikTok said, "No evidence has been presented that relates this tragic death to TikTok in any way, and it's a false narrative." The U.S. in particular has seen a rise in haunted tourism in recent years, as historic buildings cash in on the ghost hunting phenomenon. Yeah, it's cool. While the role of TikTok stunt in a death has not been publicly established, the platform has long been criticized for putting people in real-life danger. For example, TikTok faced mass criticism in 2020 for promoting the Randonauting Challenge. I did that, which encouraged users to download a separate app that would use their location to take them on adventures. Yeah, Sean Bishop and I did that, and it can be really sketchy. I mean, we're two grown men, and even we were like, this is a little sketchy. Thankfully, Sean did not shoot me twice in the neck and drain my blood. Yeah, anyhow, that's where it just starts talking about rando nodding, which is a completely different story. But weird fucking story. Ooh, crap. Weird story, though, right? I mean, insanely weird story. Right, Rum? Hi. Hi, my girl. How are you? I love you very much. Oh, I'm using an ad blocker, Rum. I can't use an ad blocker and read the story. Let me refresh that. How you doing, my good girl? Here, hop down. Good girl. Up next in paranormal news, reports of Tasmanian tiger sightings come by the thousands as Aussies search for extinct thylacine. Oh, please be true. I know it's going to be true. I know they're going to find one, but I just want it to happen already. You know, if you've listened to this program for a fairly long time, you'll know that besides wanting them to find Nessie and prove everything and finding Bigfoot and proving everything, the thylacine is the one that I'm like, yeah, this one's going to be found. There's too many sightings of thylacines in New Zealand and Australia and other places. It's going to happen. But this story says there's the Loch Ness Monster, not a monster, in Scotland. And in the Himalayas, there's the Yeti, the abominable snowman. In Tasmania, though, a teardrop of an island under the eye of the Australian mainland, there's the thylacine, a creature that brings out folklore and folks armed with grainy images convinced they've seen the thing. But unlike other mythical creatures, the thylacine actually existed. All right, well, we don't need to know that. We all know that. Yep, thylacine was real. Yep, men were crappy and killed them off. But let's see. Alan Richardson, this is like an interview kind of article. He says that he was gobsmacked when he saw the thylacine. He said, "The hairs on the back of my arm, on my arms and neck stood on end. And as that call finished, the call of the thylacine, that is, another one came from the other side of the forestry track. Another howl like that." He said, "Well, what does it sound like?" And he said, "Yep, it sounds like a thylacine." He's like, "There's only one thing, it's what it is." He's sure of it. A Tasmanian tiger. Let's go back and forth, back and forth. I don't care. Said the Tasmanian tiger roamed these parts for thousands of years. More wolf than tiger. It's a marsupial weighing about 55 pounds, also a carnivore. He said there's been 50 years without a confirmed sighting. The tiger was put on the extinct list in 1986. But he goes, I mean, this is a really hard article to read to you. I'd have to read both sides of the interview, and it's terrible. But anyhow, I'm just going to cruise through a lot of this. They show tracks where they think, yeah, this is where the thylacine laid. They say, we've got everything. We've got scat. We've got footprints. I found a series of 18 to 19 individual steps in a track line that are an excellent match for the Tassie tiger. Not only are they an excellent match, the quality of the prints is pristine. Scats. It's out there. We found it. They've taken the samples so they can examine the DNA, and they're going to compare it to the thylacine. Hi, Rum. You're very sweet, and I love you too. They're going to compare it to the thylacine, and they think they've got a match, though. So, again, thank you, sweetheart. Again, let's hope that it's the case, and it really, there's the best chance in the world that that's the case. Thylacines existed. We know they existed. Thylacines could easily still be out there. They have so much land that they can traverse that they can still be out there. Alrighty, up next in paranormal news. The haunted 116-year-old Copper Queen Hotel in Bisbee is up for sale. That's right. We're heading over to Arizona to the Copper Queen Hotel. It's now up for sale. It lists at $12.5 million. So if you have an extra $12.5 million lying around, well, you need more for taxes and everything. But say you get like an extra $20 million laying around and you want to buy a haunted hotel and make it a Paranormal Almanac headquarters, well, here's a possible location. It's located at 11 Howell Avenue. Hotel has a bar, restaurant, and 48 remodeled rooms and suites with private bathrooms. Decorated in period antiques, lively wallpaper, lavish curtains with luxurious bedding, you truly feel like you're stepping back in time. The Copper Queen Hotel has been undergoing restoration since 2017 to make modern upgrades and preserve its history. It's one of the only hotels in Bisbee with a pool and an elevator. With five stories, the hotel overlooks downtown Bisbee and has had many famous guests stop by, including Nancy Reagan, Julia Roberts, John Wayne, John McCain. I'm assuming there's way more. Let's see. Was built in 1902, officially declared a state. That's Arizona, was declared a state in 1912. Constructed by the owners of the Copper Queen Mine. It has survived the major fire of 1908 and the copper mine closing in 1974. John Wayne preferred to stay in room 211. Harry Houdini, there you go. Why'd you bury that lead? Harry Houdini and Theodore Roosevelt also stayed here. Are you going to get to the haunted? It's listed for 12.5, as they said. Nope, they're not. Apparently it's haunted. It's for sale for 12.5. I don't know. That's cool. And if you want to buy something that's haunted, well, this next one is accepting backup offers. That's right. It's pending, but it's accepting backup offers. It is an old insane asylum in Pine City, Minnesota. This one is at 10035 Pokegama Lake Road, Pine City, Minnesota. It's up for sale for $120,000. It has 36 bedrooms, 8 baths, 12,702 square feet. Yes, it's very, very, very run down. They said enter at your own risk. Property has not been inspected for safety. But this former insane asylum, sanitarium as they're calling it, it was built in 1905 as a sanatorium. There is no plumbing, no actual bathrooms, no actual bedrooms, no heat source. The building is an open slate to create and is insanely haunted. Ah, get it? Sanatorium. It's insanely haunted. So if you're looking for a cheap sanatorium, they are accepting backup offers as it has not gone through escrow or whatever it is quite yet. Alrighty, up next in paranormal news, possible UFO over New York City baffles passenger flying into LaGuardia. I've been wanting to watch this video. Oh my God, I've been wanting to watch this video. Apparently, it is a very, very clear video of a UFO, and I've been wanting to watch it since the story came out. So let me watch it now. Hopefully, fingers crossed. That's the ad. We're going to skip this ad. Oh, come on. I can't skip the ad. An airline passenger took flying saucer speculation to new heights when she spotted a possible UFO soaring above the Big Apple, baffling experts and sending federal aviation officials on a fact-finding mission Thursday. Michelle Reyes was on a commercial flight above LaGuardia Airport on March 25th when she captured video footage of a mysterious flying cylinder out of her plane window, she said on Facebook. The first thing I did was email the FAA to let them know what I saw. Maybe it was a safety hazard, but unfortunately, I've not heard back from them. They have not acknowledged my mail. Okay, here we go. Oh, that better not be it. That's it. Huh. Well, I will say, okay, stop it. They're just showing it again and again. It's like 2 seconds long. I will say it is cylindrical. It does shoot by the cabin, but that's because the plane's flying in that direction. I don't know what it is. Let me see if there's more to it. I went to to her Facebook page, because apparently she has a Facebook page. So, okay, this is a much longer video, but where is the UFO? No. All right. Yeah, there is something there. I mean, clearly something there. It looks black. It looks cylindrical. But it could be anything. It could be a black elongated balloon or trash bag or something. I don't know. I wanted movement, more movement out of it. It's definitely a UFO. I don't know what the hell it is, but I don't know. All right. Since I don't know what it is, I'll post it up on the Facebook fan page. And you guys tell me what you think. You think it's a UAP or what? Up next in paranormal news, John Oliver on UFOs. That's right. John Oliver on UFOs. John Oliver took on the tricky, potentially fun topic of UFOs on Sunday evening. He said it's a difficult subject to talk about. This is on Last Week Tonight. I don't know if you ever watch it with John Oliver. It's fantastic. Because UFOs tend to have disgust in one of two ways. Wildly speculative, with borderline contempt. But if you have the chance, I'm not going to read everything he said because you need to hear him say it. If you have the chance, if you can find it like on YouTube or if you've got HBO, please go watch John Oliver's take on UFOs. I will never do it justice if I just read you what he said because he's brilliantly funny. But I wanted to make sure that I talked about it so you guys know to go and check it out. So go and check it out. Up next, again, a great headline, but once you delve into it, it devolves very quickly. Like, very quickly. The headline is Project Aqua, UFO leak, touted on the Joe Rogan podcast. All right, I know. Just, it doesn't matter where it was said. If you like Joe Rogan, great, cool. If you don't like Joe Rogan, great, cool. But Tucker Carlson, you like him? Great, cool. You don't like him? Great, cool. Don't care. I'm talking about the UFO. He was on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he brought up something, a government scheme he called Project Aqua. And he said it was linked to UFOs. And people went, uh-oh, what is Project Aqua? We've never heard of this. And people took that little grain of salt and ran with it. And like TikTok blew up about it. And people were getting like million views about, you know, Project Aqua has been leaked by the government accidentally by Tucker Carlson. You know, like accident. He released it when he shouldn't have been talking about it, that kind of thing. And they're getting like million views. Like, no joke, a million views. But there is no such thing as Project Aqua. I don't care what you think. It does not have anything to do with remote viewing or a comms project or crashed UFO technology. No. With it just 2 minutes with the research, what he meant to talk about was a thing called Kona Blue. Kona Blue, which is a real project related to UFOs that's been mentioned in those declassified Pentagon documents. That's it. It's something we already knew about. It's Kona Blue. Really wasn't that interesting. But he called it Project Aqua, and people lost their damn minds. The program called Kona Blue in 2012 was brought to the Department of Homeland Security to possibly reverse engineer any recovered off-world spacecraft that they hoped to acquire. Look, you and I both know they've already got reverse engineered technology. They've talked about that in those Pentagon hearings. They said, yeah, we've got them. It goes on to say it's critical to note that no extraterrestrial craft or bodies were ever collected, according to Kona Blue advocates. So that's why I'm saying it's like giving this, it's giving us a grain of hope and then taking it away immediately, even though we all know it's true anyway. But no, there is no Project Aqua. He was not leaking something that is going to lead us to disclosure. He just forgot how to say Kona Blue. Anyhow, up next in paranormal news, Las Vegas non-human UFO encounter was traumatizing, says a teen. Now, I want to actually listen to his version of it, though. So I'm going to see if I can get it to play.
Not only did what happened in Vegas not stay in Vegas, it circled the known universe. The frenzy grew when reports surfaced that unknown authorities had afterwards placed cameras around this family's home. The family was driven into hiding, off the grid, out of sight, underground. But 10 months later, the mystery lives on, and looky-loos and alien hunters are still on the prowl. The family posted no trespassing signs, but break-ins have been reported frequently here as recently as last week at this home. Tonight, a News Nation exclusive, the teenager who made that 911 call is finally speaking publicly at length and laying out exactly what he saw that night and what has happened since. Our national correspondent, Alex Capriello, joins me with that live from Las Vegas tonight. So, Alex, it's really compelling, with the advent of a year passing almost, that they've had a chance to digest what it is they've been through. They have kept quiet. They are not looking for attention. And yet now you're getting information, especially from this 15-year-old or the 17-year-old, that's pretty alarming.
Yeah, and I've found out from speaking to Angel Kenmore that life just really has not been all that easy for the past year since they saw that 10-foot-tall creature in their backyard right here behind me. For him, he says that he's plain and simple traumatized by it all. He says he can't sleep at night. He's become slightly paranoid. He cries at night trying to make sense, heads or tails, of what exactly he saw that night, playing it back over and over in his head. You can imagine the torment that's going through in his head.
All righty, I'm going to skip ahead just a hair because I don't need to hear this guy's thing. I want to hear the kid's side of it.
We were in the backyard fixing a truck, and then out of nowhere, we just see a big light fall down and basically crash in the backyard. And moments after, a couple of seconds after, I saw the big giant creature in front of me. The alien, whatever you guys want to call it. The alien demon, whatever you guys want to call it.
What do you believe it is?
A demon.
A demon?
Yeah.
So maybe that's changed, that once you thought it was an alien, now you believe it was a demon.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what it is, you know. Only God knows what it was. But I'm thinking it's like something bad, you know, not a good thing.
Was it moving? Was it doing?
Yes, it was moving. You could see, like, he was breathing, like he was, like pissed off. Like he wanted to do something.
And he was looking at you and
yeah.
your brother?
Yeah, he was looking at me, yeah.
Did he say anything?
Mm-mm. I remember he was growling like a dog, like he was growling.
When did it end?
As soon as I closed my eyes, I guess. I don't know. I think I was praying or something like that, and they just let me go. That's when I went inside, and you know, I saw my dad. I saw it too.
Like it had a control of your body?
Oh yeah, I couldn't move. Yeah.
You were paralyzed at the sight of this thing.
Yeah, I couldn't move.
And you were looking at it for 30 or so seconds, and then all of a sudden it was gone.
Yeah. That was pretty creepy.
A lot of people think that that's just hard to believe.
They can think whatever they want.
What?
All right, I'm going to stop it right there, but I think it's very telling. This is that same alien UFO thing that happened in Vegas, like I said, over a year ago. This kid doesn't want attention. He's not been going around to all the sites, all of the UFO conventions. He wasn't on Joe Rogan. He's not doing all this stuff that you would think he was doing if he was trying to make some money off this, because he could make some serious money off of this immediately. I bet any money immediately every UFO convention out there invited him or wanted to, if he wanted to be out there, wanted to invite him to go to those conventions, get paid to speak, tell his story. And he hasn't done any of that as far as I can find, which is very telling that what happened to him was real. He saw something, and he's definitely scared of it. So I think it's very cool. I think it sucks that people are vandalizing his house and trying to break into his house or try to get to him, but I think it's very cool that his story has not changed. He's not become like a TikTok sensation. He seems very down-to-earth and very true about it. Kind of scary. Alrighty, up next in paranormal news, Oklahoma fishermen believe friend was going to sacrifice him to Bigfoot. Now, this one just happened, but the weird thing is this is an update. I was going to say, I talked about this guy before. Yeah, I talked about this one on a few episodes ago, but that guy, Larry Sanders, not the Larry Sanders you're thinking of, was convicted of first-degree murder and faces life in prison without parole. There's the update. Because he believed his friend was going to sacrifice him to Bigfoot, and he killed his friend. All right, that explains why. I'm like, man, that story sounds familiar. All righty, up next in paranormal news. There's lots to get to. Every time I take 10 days to do an episode, there's lots to get to. Bigfoot Festival returns. Why is it in Western North Carolina? What to know about the free event? That's right. Marion's hairiest tradition is returning for the season. The Bigfoot Festival will be back on May 18th. So, Marion, North Carolina, May 18th, there'll be a Bigfoot Festival. If you go to it, please take photos, take video, let me know. Wear your Paranormal Almanac merch while you're there. Do what you can to be the paramaniac on the streets, because I love that kind of stuff. But up next in paranormal news, that's right, I'm starting to cruise through it. Nessie photo at Scotland's Loch Ness puts Canadians in media spotlight. That's right, not from Owen O'Fadigan, but Nessie has been spotted yet again. Perry Malm and Shannon Wiseman weren't expecting a pivotal moment in their sons' lives when they visited Scotland's Loch Ness earlier this month, but that's exactly what happened. Our youngest is turning 3 next week, and he tells everyone there have been two pivotal moments in his life: seeing the world's largest dinosaur, which he did at the Natural History Museum in January, and seeing Nessie. He tells everyone he encounters. He tells the postman. He tells the guys in the shop and the cafes. Man, I want this kid on my show. Hey, what were their names? Perry Malm and Shannon Wiseman. I promise I won't swear. I'd love to have your kid on the show to tell me about his sighting of Nessie. That's freaking rad. They're from British Columbia and Calgary, and they moved to England in 2006. The couple said the original plan for the spring vacation was to take a boat ride in Loch Ness because their children were completely captivated by the concept of Nessie. I freaking love that. Oh, there's a little interview. Let me hear them.
We were going to take them on a boat trip, which featured in many of the books, and we were going to have a look to see if we could spot Nessie. We'd even packed shortbread cookies, which we were told from these books was Nessie's favorite treat. We visited the Urquhart Castle, which is on the lake, and it turns out is one of the most commonly used Nessie spotting sites. So we were visiting, the boys were playing, we were looking at the water, and suddenly we saw what has been described as a credible sighting of the Loch Ness Monster.
We had taken the picture and we were like, okay, this is cool. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. And then we were staying in a cabin in the forest way up in the Highlands in Scotland. And I was on the internet on my phone, just doom scrolling. And I was just reading about the Loch Ness Monster, and I happened upon the Loch Ness Monster registry.
Not a monster.
So I just sent in the picture just like for a bit of a laugh. And then they got in touch. Within 24 hours, they were super excited. They sent it to one of their Loch Ness experts, who said that it was compelling evidence, I believe was the exact phrase. And just one thing led to another. I mean, it's been incredible. We were on like the Sun newspaper, the Daily Mirror. We were in Lad Bible. I don't know if you know what Lad Bible is, but we front page Lad Bible. So like every 23-year-old in the world has like seen our faces. I don't know how I feel about that.
All right. That's hilarious. I love these guys. I want them to be on the show. I got to try and find them. It's a great looking Nessie photo, and I'm so excited, and I would love to talk to them and their kid about it. That's amazing. Let me skip ahead a little bit. I'm going to go to one last story before we move on. And it's a story that I'm so excited to tell anytime that I see his name in the news. That's right. Owen O'Fadigan is back. That is amazing. He has a new sighting. The man, the myth, the legend, my friend, well, I'll call him my friend. I hope he considers me his friend. A fresh Loch Ness monster, not a monster sighting. As creature as big as 3 men emerges from the water. Nessie sighting has been reported by a long-standing monster hunter, Kurt here, the longest standing non-monster hunter out there, who claims the recent spot as big as 3 men. That's right. Monster Hunter, I don't think that's what he would like to be called. Come on. Owen O'Fadigan had his eyes on the water through a webcam set up at the monitor, the lock, and his heart jumped when he spotted the beast. A large black shape broke the surface of the water, and according to him, it was the elusive Nessie. I love it. Well done. Well done again, Owen O'Farrigan. That is so freaking cool. That about does it for Paranormal News. I just had to get that one in there because anytime there's a news story with him on there, I'm going to talk about it because he's the coolest. All righty, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with the actual continuation of Paranormal Almanac. All righty, you all know where we are. It's in the title. Just look at the screen real quick. That's right, we're all in West Virginia right now. Even if you aren't, you're in West Virginia right now for this episode. West Virginia seems to have everything. If you listen to the last episode, my God, had a ton of cryptids. And if you listen to this episode or continue to listen to this episode, please do. Please listen. I did a lot of work here. There's a whole lot of crap still left to talk about in West Virginia. We're back in the land of creepy stuff, but not for cryptids, though. Let's look at the other paranormal stuff in good old Weva. That's right. I did a cliffhanger. I teased it. We went from cryptids. I gave you one ghost just to quench your thirst. Is that what it says? Is that the phrase? I wanted you to be like, ooh, I got to know more. Well, now you're about to know more. Starting with the Lake Shawnee Amusement Park. Now, it's not an opened amusement park, but it's like a paranormal abandoned one. So you can still get your thrills and or chills here, I suppose. When it opened in the 1920s, no one thought, should we open an amusement park for kids on a Native American battleground? Sure, why not? What's the worst that could happen, right? That's right. There was a battle there between Mitchell Clay and the local Shawnee Native American tribe. That's because, for some reason, the Shawnee Native American tribe killed two or three of Clay's children. They murdered them. But it isn't as bad as it sounds, okay? Because Clay had 14 children. His family needed a little pruning, in my opinion. Back then, 1920s, come on. That was a rough time for America. Even rougher for Clay, Mitchell Clay, because, you know, two of his kids were knocked down. So anyhow, Clay killed several of the Pawnee tribe and left them to die on the land. Cut to. I don't have a cut to sound. Cut to. Sure. 1926, 6 years later, the park opens. And just about immediately, bad stuff starts happening. What kind of stuff happened to a nice park? Well, how about this one? A young girl dies on the swings. Now, I'm not talking like normal, like little swing set you see at a park. I'm talking to those swings where you get on them and they do a bunch of like spin around scary crap that Kurt doesn't like. Well, this little kid was on there when a delivery truck backed into her seat, killing her in place. I don't know if you guys have been to a lot of amusement parks. That isn't the desired ending to the swing set ride. You just want to spin around in a circle, then it comes slowly to a stop, and then you get off and go get cotton candy. You never want to swing around in a circle, then have a delivery truck back into your seat, killing you in place. But that's not it. Next, a young boy drowned in the swimming pool after his arm got stuck in a drain pipe. That's a bad sign. Then, four more deaths happened while the park was open. And I'm just going to say it. It's the happiest cursed land in town in West Virginia. Then, while the park was open, people started hearing disembodied Native American chants at night throughout the park. Now, this kind of stuff kept up until 1966. That's right, from 1926 to 1966, this park stayed open. Kids are dying. Four other people are dying. They're hearing disembodied Native American chanting. Is there really nothing else to do in Lake Shawnee that you have to keep this place open? You'd think the little girl died? All right, you know what? Let's shut it down. Little girl died and a little boy? Let's definitely shut it down. Six people died? Let's see what happens. Screw it. Let's see what happens. Anyhow, 1966, they closed the park down. Then sometimes after that, the next person that bought the land was like, well, we're going to, you know, dig it up because I want to make the land a better amusement park. So let's dig up some stuff, right? Let's do some construction. So they start on the construction and they unearth a Native American burial ground. Yay! Nothing bad ever happens when you build on top of a Native American burial ground. Then this guy, he bought the property, began tearing into the land, found the burial ground. Archaeologists from Marshall University spent several years uncovering artifacts and graves, which a total of 13 Native American skeletons were uncovered, mostly of elderly people and young Native American children. Alrighty, let's get to the little bit of a grain of salt stuff that's happened here, because it seems to be very embellished, but I think I weeded out a lot of the crap, and here's more or less the truth. So in the 1980s, the park was opened again when Gaylord White bought the land, and in addition to purchasing a Ferris wheel, because he wanted to bring it back to being an amusement park, he found a swing ride that seemed to be just like the swing ride that used to be at the park. When they installed the swings on the property, they realized the serial number matched that of the swings that were on the property from the 1920s until 1966. That's right. The swing set that the little girl died on. That can't be true. And if it is, good Lord, that place is cursed. All right, so what kind of stuff happens there if you go nowadays? Voices, shadows, footsteps, ghost children. One of those rusty swings will move on its own. One site says someone got locked in a dilapidated ticket booth, even though the doors don't lock. Basically, all the fun stuff that you want from a Native American burial ground slash amusement park. They say that the little boy that drowned is watching out over the pond or the lake so people can't drown in it. And the little girl is still swinging on the swing set, and she doesn't like the one she got crushed on, but the one next to it she seems to like. Like, there's a lot of those kind of stories that are out there. But let's keep going, because there's lots to get to. And I mean a lot to get to in West Virginia. Let's move on over to Harper's Ferry, which is a town, not an actual ferry. Like, not a boat ferry. Oh, I guess not also, not a ferry. Like, you know, like little tiny, like Tinkerbell. Look, it's a town, and it's called Harper's Ferry. I was thinking it was called that because it was a ferry, and then I looked into it and I'm like, oh, it's not a ferry, it's a town. But look, everything West Virginia either has Native American ties or Civil War ties. So yeah, it's going to be haunted one way or another. And this town, Harper's Ferry, well, it's no exception. This town has Civil War soldiers performing marching drills at night, and that seems loud and tiring for the living. Like, the first time, you're like, whoa, that's cool. You see that entire platoon or whatever of Civil War soldiers doing marching drills. But after the first night, you're going to be like, oh God, it's the freaking marching drills again. It also has the ghost of John Brown who walks the streets at night. Who? All right. Here is a quick history lesson for everyone, including me, because I didn't know who John Brown was. So here's your quick Paranormal Almanac history lesson. John Brown was an American abolitionist. He was born on May 9th, 1800 in Connecticut and died December 2nd, 1859 in Virginia, now West Virginia. He was a militant American abolitionist whose raid on the federal arsenal at Harper's Ferry, Virginia, now in West Virginia, in 1859 made him a martyr to the anti-slavery movement and was instrumental in heightening sectional animosities that led to the American Civil War. So, cool guy, anti-slave, so seems like a good enough guy, I guess. But back to the spooky. His ghost is seen just wandering the streets constantly. He's always out there wandering around, which is now in West Virginia. I didn't realize that Virginia split somewhere down the line, because, again, I have, you know, I was part of the public school system and many, many moons ago. But back to the spooky, besides him, besides his ghost, what else is seen there? Well, in Harper's Ferry, there's another ghost. Her name is Screamin' Jenny, whom I'm guessing is a woman ghost that screams, based on context. So let's find out. Screamin' Jenny is a woman who was caught fire, who caught fire and ran into an oncoming train. Wow. Screamin' Jenny is a woman who caught fire and then ran into an oncoming train. Quick history lesson number two. I had to check to see if this was real, and it seems to be real. One cold evening in late autumn, Jenny sat around her fire, shivering, when a spark flew onto her skirt and set it alight, according to the blog Dark Hauntings. But a bunch of different websites all maintain that this seems true. But this blog says Jenny instinctively ran in the direction of the train station, hoping someone was there to aid her because, you know, she's on fire. Her body was a glowing inferno within minutes, and Jenny was in overwhelming pain. Her screams became more blood-curdling, but her steps become much slower. She staggers blindly onto the tracks just west of the station, a ball of fire that barely looked human, according to the website AmericanFolklore.net. In her agony, she did not see the glowing headlights of the train rounding the curve or hear the screech of the brakes. They spell brakes wrong, by the way. As the engineer spotted her fire-eaten figure and tried to stop. A moment later, her terrible screams broke off as the train mowed her down. See, isn't that way more, like, flourished and embellished than if I just said, there's this woman that was, like, standing too close to a fire. She caught on fire. She freaked out because she was on fire and ran in front of a train, and the train went and hit her and killed her. So, anyhow, Jenny's screams stopped, and her attempt to save her life resulted in failure. The crew found her and gave her a proper burial, placing her body in an unmarked grave near a local churchyard. Okay, there's a lot of things I don't like about this story. If she's in an unmarked grave, how do we know her name was Jenny? Did anybody see her and be like, is that Jenny? Is Jenny on fire? We should stop this train. Look, there's Jenny. Oh, she's in front of us. Oh, we killed Jenny. Like, how do you know this was a woman named Jenny? But her ghost, especially on the anniversary of her death, can be seen as a ball of fire on the train tracks that disappear when a train strikes her, it, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, it's a messed up ghost story is what I'm saying. But it's not just these ghosts. Oh, no. According to Alyssa Lavasseur, who is manager of the John Brown Wax Museum, the whole town is haunted. People have seen things. You probably ask anyone in town who's been living here or works here, they've seen something. They can't deny it. She says, I hear ghosts all the time. I've heard kid ghosts, voices, footsteps, so I know they're here. I say good morning to them. Yep, Kurt here. That's right. The Wax Museum in Harper's Ferry is freaking haunted. She said that one day she didn't say good morning to the ghost. She said, I was walking by one of the displays when the audio went on by itself. You have to push a button to turn it on. And that's when I realized I hadn't said good morning to the spirits. And as soon as I did, the sound stopped. Cool. So you got yourself a chance to see a ball of fire screaming Jenny ghost. You can see an abolitionist ghost. But if you keep walking, then you can go to the wax museum. You can see those ghosts. But if you keep walking, you can then go to, I'm going to give you like a walking tour of Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. You can start wherever you want and then go to the train tracks and then go to the Wax Museum. And then the next stop on this walking tour is a place called True Treats Historic Candy Store, which I seriously hope isn't that old-timey lemon drops with powdered sugar on it crap that I used to get as a kid because it was the only candy at the historical towns. I want real candy, people. But anyhow, the True Treats Historic Candy Store is your next stop. And the store manager, Tara Dockman, known as the Ghost Lady in her town for sensitivity to paranormal activities, says there are two ghosts who frequent the store. She even knows one of them by name. The female has a white flowy gown, so a woman in white ghost, and she goes to the top floor of the store where there are no customers. And then there's Colby, a man. He likes to show himself. Kurt here, I hope you don't mean like that, and usually shows a shoulder or a pants leg, which you will see walk across the room. They both like to throw candy around and slam doors on customers. Yeah, it's going to be that crappy old-timey candy. The ghosts are pissed because they can't get good candy. Come on, Tara. Colby, she said, is a troublemaker who may also push people. So there you go. You go there next, but we're not done. Once you're done with the buying your crappy dots on a piece of paper that you have to, you know, peel off with your teeth and then eat, and they're not very good, but it's still candy, so you eat it. You want to go over to the A Step in Time Bakery and Coffee Shop because it has its own residence ghosts. That's right. The owner says, yeah, this place has its own ghosts. They even help out in the kitchen. They're not troublesome. They're helpful. All right, so you stop there. You can get your coffee and a baked good, I assume. Next, we want to walk over to St. Peter's Catholic Church, built in 1833, because here, Father Michael Costello, the priest from 1857 to 1867, is still said to be around, just kind of wandering the church as a priest ghost, but they also have a soldier ghost. It's said that some people entering the church still hear the soldier's ghost's last words. They hear a ghost say, "Thank God I am saved." Are you though? You're not really saved. It seems like you died on the steps of a church during the Civil War. It's time to move on, but all right, we're going to keep moving on. Your next stop on your walking tour of the most haunted town in West Virginia is the Harper House. And what's that? We've got treasure alert. That's right. This next one, the Harper's House, not only has a ghost, but it has a ghost possibly guarding or looking for treasure. It was built in the late 1700s by Rachel and Robert Harper. So their home is on top of the hillside in Harper's Ferry, and it ran a ferry service. Hey, finally, there we go. That's where we get the ferry in Harper's Ferry. All right, so the business did quite well before the Revolutionary War, but they were forced to pay outrageous taxes to England, and it's said that Rachel hid much of the money in jars to avoid paying fees. So she buries and hides the money jars, but then one day in 1780, 60-year-old Rachel fell from a ladder and dies the next day without telling anyone, not even her husband, where the money was buried. Then, 2 years later, in 1782, 64-year-old Robert Harper dies, and the money was never found. Now, some people believe that the money is actually hidden in the garden across from the old town. Quick, Tracy, go metal detect there. That's right, Tracy, my resident paranomaniac treasure hunter, in case you didn't know. You live roughly there, or you've been there, or whatever. Get your ass to Harper's Ferry. Go to the Harper's home on the hill and metal detect. It's people must have done this already a million times. But supposedly, there is still treasure there somewhere around Harper's home. Their treasure was never found, and that's cool and all. But Rachel's ghost is seen peering out towards the garden from the Harper House window. I can only assume the ghost is also seen mouthing the words, "Kurt, the money's in the garden." But that's why a lot of people think we just haven't found it yet, but that money is still out there in the garden, and that ghost is keeping watch on the treasure. All right, you must be thinking, all right, that was cool. That was a good way to end Harper's Ferry. We're moving on in West Virginia, right? Nope. Oh, no, no, no. We go to John Brown's Fort, which was built by a guy named, yeah, you guessed it, John Brown. Like I said, he's a good guy, helped free slaves. Until, long story short, he was caught doing it and hanged on December 2nd, 1859. His ghost is said to appear along the streets in town, a full-body apparition that looks so real that some tourists that have spotted the ghost think it's a guy in a costume. But nope, it's a ghost. So that's kind of cool. The ghost is so real that people are like, come on, that's obviously a John Brown and abolitionist impersonator. There's no possible way. Yeah, no, it's a ghost. So that one's cool. All right, let's keep virtually walking. We're going to walk to Hog's Alley in Harper's Ferry, which, look, nothing good has ever happened in a place named Hog's Alley. And the story you're about to hear is not good either. It's about a man named Dangerfield Newby, who is a freed slave. He was trying to free his wife and child from slavery before they were sold. Unfortunately, word got out by a-holes in the town, and he was caught in a raid of slave sympathizers. So they catch him in the act, or trying to free his slave wife and child, and they kill him with a spike in the neck. Jesus, you had nothing better to kill him with than a spike to the neck? But we're not done yet, no, because pro-slavery citizens, or a-holes as I like to call them, then took his body and repeatedly stabbed it and amputated the limbs. He was already dead. He bled out from a giant spike in the neck. Still not done, though. Then they took that repeated, stabbed, bloodied, amputated body and tossed it into the alley to be eaten by hogs that ran the streets. And I don't mean the hogs were like running the streets. I mean, hogs would run through the streets because that's why they call it Hog's Alley. Now, his ghost has been seen wandering down the streets, and eyewitnesses say he has a horrible scar across his throat, which, to be fair, at least his ghost seems to have arms and legs, as in, and not just like, you know, like just flopping around in Hog's Alley with arms and legs and a giant spike in the neck. You know, let's be realistic. He got off a little bit light as a ghost. Still sucks. And you know, people are, you know, always doing the whole like, and he's still out there searching for his wife and child. You don't know. You don't know why he's wandering around. He could be wandering around going like, Jesus Christ, did you see what they did to my body back in the day? You people are terrible. All right. With that, let's just say that that's the majority of the ghosts in this Twin Peaks effed up little town of Harper's Ferry. There are more, but they're all like basic ghost sightings from this point on. So we got to keep moving on. We're almost at an hour and I've only been through like one town in Virginia, West Virginia. Let's move on to the West Virginia Penitentiary. Now it's listed as one of the most haunted prisons in the United States. So you can safely bet it's going to have ghosts. All right, the West Virginia Penitentiary had several riots, fires, and over 100 executions since it was built in 1876. But the first known recorded ghost story from here actually happened way back in 1930s when guards saw inmates roaming freely about the prison. However, they sound the alarm, they searched the whole prison, no one had escaped. No one was freed. No one was out there. No one was bound. They saw ghosts is what I'm telling you. But nowadays, people see the, quote, shadow man, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a shadow man. And all the basics happen here. Footsteps, whispers, voices, shadows, movements, the usual stuff. Let's move on. When we get to the usual stuff, let's move on to the Blennerhassett Hotel. Yeah, the Blennerhassett Hotel is haunted by William Chancellor, who built the property in the late 1800s. People staying at the hotel have claimed to see the ghosts of children playing in the hallways. Kurt here, I'm assuming these kids aren't Mr. Hassenpfeffer or whatever the crap his name is. Or, no, they also see a man dressed in a tuxedo in the mirrors. That's right, they don't see him, but when they look in the mirrors, all of a sudden behind them will be a man dressed in 1800s tuxedos in the mirrors. All righty, let's do a quick paranormal news time at this point in the article, in the episode, that is. Let me pull up the article. Here we go. We go to WBOY.com. That's right, Channel 12, WBOY. The oldest hotel in West Virginia haunted by several ghosts. That's right, nestled in downtown whatever, the Blennerhassett Hotel was built in the late 1800s. Despite several setbacks over the years, fires, floods, and major renovations, the hotel is still open for guests to enjoy. With all the memories many locals have of the hotel, it's no surprise the hotel has ghosts. The hotel was named after Harmon and Margaret Blennerhassett, but the ghosts reported at the hotel are from the industrial era. Guests and staff have seen children riding tricycles, vaudevillians, men wearing top hats and bowler hats. They say that's just so cool because it tells about the history of the town through the actual ghost stories themselves. This is Jason Burns, a West Virginia storyteller. He says, because you've got the colonial era on the island with Margaret, and then you've got the industrial era on the mainland with the hotel. The one well-known ghost story at the Blennerhassett is the woman in the elevator. Legend has it that people will see a ghost walking into the elevator and vanish. Adam Dotson, the hospitality guest special services, hospitality guest services specialist, there we go, at the Blennerhassett Hotel, recalled a time that a postman with a delivery actually spotted that ghost. He had never been down here before. I told him to go through these doors and get on the elevator and go downstairs, and I'd be right there with him. After a few minutes, Dotson decided to go with the postman to make sure he knew where he was going. He caught the delivery man before the elevator closed. He looked over at me, and the first thing he said, serious could be, is this place haunted? The delivery man continued to say that he had caught the end of a woman getting on the elevator and that before the door shut, he stopped it, but there wasn't anyone on the elevator. They say they also have the cigar room door. The ghost of a woman has been known to frequent the door facing 4th Street on the Blennerhassett Hotel. The door had once been the entrance to the gentleman's cigar stand and smoking room in 1889. According to the staff, the door now serves no purpose. Sherry Stevens, human resources manager at the hotel, said she spotted the ghost recently while walking to her car one evening. It was mid-afternoon. I was walking down the sidewalk across the street, and something flashed, and it made me look in the direction of the door. So I stopped for a second, and I saw a woman looking right at me in the door window. That's cool. She said that she saw the woman twice within a week, and she always looks in the window when she passes by now, but she hasn't seen the ghost since then. She describes the woman as having a white, expressionless face and bright red hair. She said she could tell the woman wasn't from this era. She wore a light blue dress that had a frilly, tall collar and a brooch. I wasn't scared, and she didn't look evil or anything like that. It just made me stop and look like, is this what I'm seeing? And then it went away. They also see shadowy figures. That's right, staff had said that they frequently see black shadow figures in the basement. The figures are described as being silhouettes of people, sometimes wearing top hats, trench coats, and fur collars. The laundry room looks to be a hot spot for the ghost, as many staff members have reported seeing the figure walk to a staircase at the end of the washing machines that leads to the bellman's closet in the main lobby. Dotson said he saw a shadow figure walk into his office, which is also in the basement. Thinking the shadow was a server in black clothes, he looked into his office and no one was there. They've often seen a man with a bowler hat. One of the most famous ghost stories is the story of the man with the bowler hat. He's known to be seen in the dry storage area in the basement and also in room 409, which is located a few stories above the storage area. Staff at the hotel believe the ghost may be connected to the Kaltennecker building, which was built next door to the hotel by businessman Johann Kaltennecker. The hotel acquired the building and incorporated that portion of the building during the 1985 renovation. 409, room 409 is the only two-story suite in the hotel. As well as seeing the bowler hat man, guests who stay in that room have reported hearing furniture moving around at night. One guest said that the bowler hat man tried to hold her down in bed by her neck one morning. Holy crap, this got dark. One guest said that the bowler hat man tried to hold her down in bed by her neck one morning. Dotson said he had an encounter with the ghost while staying in room 407, which is next door to room 409. He said he had chosen the room because it's known to be on the quiet side of the hotel, but he woke up to what sounded like a party in room 409. The next morning, he told the front desk about how noisy the people in room 409 were that night, and the staff said he was the only one on that floor on that end of the hotel. That is cool. So it sounds like, again, if you do go to this town and you try to find the treasure, just give me one coin if you find the treasure. Then I can put it with my other treasure. Stay at the Blennerhassett Hotel in room 409. Very cool. Very cool town. But let's keep on moving on, shall we? Let's keep going to Morgantown. First, we go to West Virginia University, where Elizabeth Moore was the principal of the Woodburn Female Seminary, a women's education academy. She died, obviously, and people started seeing her ghost almost immediately there. And they still do to this day. Well, I mean, maybe not to today, but I mean, they still do in current times. Look, they're still seeing her, is what I'm saying. Students have seen her ghost hovering over E. Moore Hall. That's kind of cool. Look, if you're going to be a ghost and you happen to have a hall named after you, yeah, hover over that. Be like, behold my hall. Like, you know, you want to be like, really, like, have people go like, holy crap, there's Kurt and he's floating over Kurt Hall, like that kind of a thing. They also seen her roam in the halls, and employees have seen her in the halls too. And others have discovered her portrait moved to different areas of the building without ever being touched. All right, you need more hovering? Well, hold on. This ghost loves to hover. She's also been seen floating above the swimming pool in the basement. But that's not it. It's not just the Elizabeth Moore ghost at West Virginia University. Oh, no, no, no. This university also has a ghost cow. Warning, it's a sad story. I'm not going to go too deep into it. A long time ago, students stole a cow that was either a mascot or they wanted it as a prank. So they took it up some stairs to hide it in West Virginia University. But in case you didn't know this, here's your fun fact for this episode. Cows can't go downstairs. So they get the cow up there, and the cow's making all this kind of noise. The students get caught, and then they realize, oh, crap, we can't get this cow back downstairs. So the cow was euthanized. It's terrible. But ever since then, this poor cow ghost keeps mooing from the upper floors. So, fun fact, I guess, number two is apparently ghost cows can't go downstairs either. How traumatic must that have been for the cow that it's a ghost cow still stuck there now? That's terrible. But let's stay in the university. Let's go to something called the Mountain Lair. I don't know. I just accepted it at this point that there's a place in this West Virginia university called the Mountain Lair. It sounds like a place where a Bond villain would live, but yeah, it's called the Mountain Lair. Yep, it has a ghost. It has a kid ghost. It has a kid ghost named Sally, who is apparently a young girl that became ill with typhoid fever. Before her death, she visited the building with her parents where the lair now stands. No idea. Let's keep going. The story, Sally dies of typhoid and she's buried in a cemetery where Stuart Hall is now located. Then the bodies were moved from that cemetery to another location. But Sally stuck around. That's right. Witnesses say that she dances around the Mountain Lair wearing a yellow dress. And she's also seen between the pillars of Stuart Hall. They say that once Sally rounds the corner, she is gone. The Mountain Lair is also the site of the famous Decker's Creek Massacre, which occurred back in 1759. I don't have time for another history lesson. Look, you can kind of figure it out. There's a place called Decker's Creek, and there was some kind of massacre. I'm assuming it had something to do with Native Americans and white people being terrible. Let's just assume I'm right. But that all happened at the Mountain Lair as well. So lots of crap happened at the Mountain Lair. Let's keep going. Let's go to Stansbury Hall. It was built in 1928. It was haunted by a man dressed as though he was from Victorian times, though, wearing a bowler hat, black jacket, black suit. The unidentified ghost they call Mr. Stansbury. They say he prefers the third floor hallways and rooms with large windows. All right, let's keep moving. Still in Morgantown. Let's go to the public library. The Morgantown Public Library has its share of ghosts. It's got the usuals, seen and heard, but books are heard being knocked down. And when people go to check, there are no books knocked over. But they also have a ghost named Isabel Jane. But, so I looked it up. I'm like, Isabel Jane, that's a very specific name. It must be like Sally, where they know the person's name. No. Here's a direct quote from the people that work at the Morgantown Public Library. "We have a ghost named Isabel Jane, but we're unsure who the ghost could actually be." Yeah. So, yep, another dumb ghost name for no reason. But wait, there's more. When Isabel Jane appears, those who see it describe it as a man dressed in clothing from the 19th century. So why is it named Isabel Jane? That's dumb on top of dumb. Come on. Come on. I don't know. Let's go to another paranormal news article about Morgantown. This next ghost is called the Red-Headed Man. It involves a story that was passed on to me by Kurt McCoy, with whom some of you may know wrote that great book, White Things, West Virginia's White Monsters, which is apparently available online. Go read it if you want. But it's a story that comes close to home for me, quite literally. Kurt is another West Virginia ghost slash monster story collector, came across this story while working on his current book about West Virginia water monsters. The Red-Headed Man is a story that is set in the colonial days of West Virginia. Back then, it was still known as Western Virginia. It takes place in Fort Cobun, which was located near Dorsey's Knob in Morgantown. Let's see. Fort Cobun was built in 1770 near Dorsey's Knob, and I'm sure that its foundations lie somewhere beneath the old Morgantown Mall or the Giant Eagle. It's part of a Native American raiding party that the fort was attacked and overrun. During this raid, many settlers were killed or kidnapped. One of them became known as, quote, the Red-Headed Man. Now, apparently people have been trying to find this guy's name. They can't find it, if in fact it was ever there. They said that he was a soldier. He was kidnapped by the natives, carried to an area near the base of Dorsey's Knob. There, the natives tied him to an X-like cross they had staked into the ground. While tied up, the natives also scalped him and did not stop at the top of his head. Instead, they scalped him down to his neck, and he subsequently bled to death from the wounds. Since then, there have been sightings of the red-headed man near Dorsey's Knob in Morgantown, which is now a local park area. Many people have also told stories about being parked up at Dorsey's Knob, I'm assuming playing with other people's knobs, and they encountered the specter. He is clothed in his colonial uniform, and his head is blood red, with veiny flesh still unhealed even in death. It is said that the red-headed man grabs unsuspecting people by the scalp and face, attempting to replace his lost skin with theirs. Kurt here, I think that's a little bit of embellishment, but okay. They say there's protection against the red-headed man, however. Many visitors, even to this day, carry a small handmade cross, basically two sticks tied with twine, on their windshields. Apparently, the red-headed man still fears the apparatus which he was tied and tortured on, even in miniature version. It's fun. That's a fun story. I don't know how much I buy of it, but anyhow, let's keep on keeping on. Let's move on to the North Bend Rail Trail. I'm talking about Tunnel 19. Tunnel number 19, is a very hot, big paranormal hotspot in West Virginia. But a lot of it is very, it's just the basics, the basic paranormal stuff. But part of the trail around Tunnel number 19 is known to be haunted by the ghost of a young woman. It's not clear who she is, but many have seen a young woman in a flowing white dress in this area as well. But it seems to be a very active place. If you want to see a ghost, go to Tunnel 19, part of the trail, but bring a flashlight and, I don't know, let's just say bring a sword, because the girl is afraid of swords, just like that redheaded guy is afraid of crosses for no reason. All right, let's keep moving on. That's a cool place, but it's all basic paranormal stuff. Look, there's just so many ghosts to get to. Like, let's go over to Lewisburg, which is another small town filled with more ghosts than people, apparently. The first stop here is the Old Stone Church. That's right. Here, people say that late at night, they hear the moaning and cries of pain coming from the Old Stone Church, which Kurt here is way worse than the moans and cries of pleasure coming from the... No, it's better. Yeah, I would rather hear the moaning and cries of pain coming from an old church than the cries and moanings of pleasure coming from a church. Never mind. It's thought that the building served as a Civil War hospital, and the ghost cries are those of wounded soldiers. So let's walk over from there to the General Lewis Inn. It's also very, very haunted. That's two verys. They say that there are up to three ghosts here with all the basics. They also say that the ghosts here are very tricky and mischievous, but it's all the basic stuff. Anything you would expect to happen at a ghost hotel happens here at the General Lewis Inn. But you can't go to Lewisburg and not want to see the Greenbrier Ghost. That's right, the Greenbrier Ghost is the ghost of Zona Heister or Hester Shue. She was a young, married, and pregnant woman when she was found dead one January night in 1897, still pregnant, in Greenbrier County. The local newspaper said she had died in childbirth and was laid to rest a few days later. But people said it wasn't childbirth that killed her. Oh, no, no, no. According to local legend, Zona's spirit visited her mother and told her how her abusive husband had actually murdered her. The mom was so convinced that this visitation was real that she had the town's prosecutor exhume her daughter's body. And the autopsy revealed her neck had been broken, which, look, I'm no baby expert. Kurt here, I'm no baby expert, but I'm pretty sure that your neck doesn't get broken in natural childbirth or from just being pregnant. I know that other gross stuff happens in natural childbirth, but rarely does the mother's-to-be's neck just break on its own from contractions, is what I'm saying. So, yeah, they go, wait, I guess she probably didn't just die from being pregnant back in 1897. She died probably of that broken neck. So her husband was ultimately found guilty, and today, a plaque commemorates the famous ghost that helped convict a murderer. Sure, she's dead and the baby died and it was brutal murder. And you guys just looked at the brutally murdered body and went, must be natural causes. But yeah, the husband was at least put away for it. You know, the a-hole was put away for it. So at least that's good. Yeah, put up a plaque. Why not? All right, let's keep moving on. There's still so many more ghosts to get to. Let's go on to Mason County. Yep, we're talking Mothman area. But this episode's about ghosts, not about that amazing ass-tastic cryptid. We go to the north to the Sliding Hill in Hartford City. So right around that same area as Mothman was seen. But there's ghosts. They're supposedly seeking a treasure. That's right. Treasure number two for this episode. Two treasures, one episode. Not even about treasures. All right, according to this local legend, back in the early 1800s, what would become Hartford City, West Virginia, along the border of then Virginia and Northwest Territory, two men were traveling west to make a new start, stop for the night to sleep on what would now be Antiquity on the Ohio side of the river. According to the Mason County Historical Society, little did the two men know that they were being followed and would be robbed and brutally murdered in the middle of the night. The robbers buried the two men's bodies under a shelving rock, and they were only discovered decades later when workers were blasting away stone to lay a culvert, according to the West Virginia Explorer magazine. So, fearing for the safety, the robbers decided to travel a short distance down the river and bury the loot on what would become Sliding Hill in Hartford City, West Virginia. That's right, the robbers got lucky, and these men were loaded. Legend says that the robbers joined a group of Native Americans fighting in the war against settlers. One of the robbers was beheaded and killed during one of these battles, and the others fatally wounded. According to the Mason County Historical Society, before the wounded man died, though, he confessed to the murders to an officer and drew him a rough map of the treasure's location. Now, it is unknown if that treasure has ever been found, but ghost side of things, phantom lights and shadow figures with swinging lamps have been seen at night wandering along the hillside after dark, quote, looking for the lost treasure. And at least one of the ghosts is rumored to be headless. All right, that's kind of cool. Now, there are a ton of stories online about locals finding old coins while out hiking around there. They also found skeletons near Antiquity, and they think the legends of this treasure are actually true. A lot of the things just keep lining up, basically. According to the Mason County Historical Society, the land was owned by the Hartford City Coal and Salt Company, which stopped and forbade treasure hunters from digging around its property. They also speculate that the construction of Route 62 may have actually destroyed the treasure or at least buried it under the road. Wow, that story is like Stand By Me and Goonies had a baby, but they broke their necks while giving birth. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Now, if you look up West Virginia and treasures, holy crap, are there a ton of them. I might have to do like a full West Virginia treasure episode somewhere in the future because damn, there's a lot of them. For example, there is a news article about from Point Pleasant, West Virginia on October 14th, 1887. It's talking about the ghost of Sliding Hill, that story I just told you. And it says the ghost of Sliding Hill from the Cincinnati Inquirer, October 14th, 1887. And it tells about the town. It tells about the guy, what the guy told people, you know, where the money was buried. Been buried by two murderers somewhere along Sliding Hill between the two places almost a century ago. The river at this point and flowing directly westward strikes abruptly against this hill. The money was buried with a star. The time of this occurrence is about 1810. I mean, this news article goes into depth about what this guy said, where it exactly was at, the sharp angles along the Ohio River, like the Ohio side of the river, like basically giving you pointers to where this treasure could possibly be. And it is a long news article. And that is just one of the treasures of like West Virginia that I found. Like when I really started looking into West Virginia and treasures for this episode, they're pretty much nonstop. There's one from Parkersburg in 1951. There's gold in a buried lard bucket in West Virginia. There's sunken rail cars of whiskey in New River. So if you guys like whiskey, please, if someone can find that treasure and send me a bottle of that whiskey, it'd be amazing. There's one about a Morgantown / Greene County 1868 treasure. $10,000 in coins were dug up in 1902 in a different part of West Virginia. Huntington counterfeiters, grave robbers, pots of gold in Wheeling, $2,000 dug up in Wheeling. Satan dug up in Elm Grove. Hold on, I got to click on that one. Woman finds pots of gold, blah, blah, blah. Here we go. This is interesting. I didn't even know about this one. This is from the other side of the hill, but it says, Satan dead. Petrified body has been dug up. Satan is dead. His petrified remains have been unearthed and now are at the Elm Grove, West Virginia. Later, the curious find, which has puzzled local scientists viewing the gruesome object, will be shown to noted scientists of the country. With horns projecting from the forehead, spiked tail, and cloven hooves, the stone form is attracting great attention and creating a sensation. Hunters dug up the petrified object along Big Wheeling Creek near West Alexander. While investigating what was apparently a groundhog hole, one hunter unearthed the head, and rushing to his companions, he excitedly told them of his find. The entire party then continued the search and uncovered the whole form of a satanic majesty. What? What in the crap is that about? That's in the treasure section of this site about West Virginia. Look, I'm telling you, West Virginia, you got a lot of crazy crap. But there's more. I mean, honestly, there's four pages. I've barely scrolled through the first page of just goat farmer's treasure. 1540 coin found in Pedro, West Virginia, part of a treasure. Kermit, West Virginia. There's a Kermit, West Virginia. That's cool. Buried gold not found there. So yeah, I'm going to do an episode on treasure, West Virginia treasure somewhere down the line because it's too good not to. But for this episode, let's keep on going. I'm going to read from one more. I'm going to read to you from I'll read a couple more. Screw it. I'll keep going. I don't care. I know it's almost dinner time for me, but I'm going to keep on going. But I'm going to read to you this next one from a site that is devoted to this story. Instead of me like doing all the research, well, I did the research. I found this site and I went, all right, this site wrote it all out. I'm just going to read to you directly from this site about this next one or two. Same site. In 1932, Mamie Thurman, a pretty dark-haired 31-year-old housewife married to local policeman in Logan, West Virginia. It's 3 hours from the Hocking Hills. Anyhow, Mamie was also an active churchgoer at Knightbert Memorial in downtown Logan and a member of the Logan's Women's Club. Most of this is taken from the news article about this. They rented a two-room apartment over a garage located in the backyard of some guy's house. Doesn't matter his name. He was described having a greasy hair, a pinched face, and thick glasses. But on Wednesday, June 22nd of 1932, Garland Davis, a 32-year-old deaf mute, was picking berries near the top of Trace Mountain when he stumbled upon the grisly sight, the body of a young woman who'd been shot and stabbed and left discarded in a ditch. So he goes and gets the police. The police check it out. The body was identified as Mamie Thurman. They said nothing at the scene suggested robbery. Her pocketbook was found near her body, which contained $8 in cash and some loose change and cigarettes wrapped in paper. She was wearing a wristwatch, a gold diamond ring, and an engagement ring. A paper with a license plate number was found nearby. The police began questioning neighbors and friends. Several names quickly came up, including two suspects, Harry Robertson, the handyman, and Clarence Stevenson. While the funeral was being held and whispers were beginning around town, Robertson's house was searched by the state police and there was depression on the basement wall that was suspected of a bullet hole. Bloodstains were found on both the carpet and a razor, and bloodstains were also found on the seat and windshield of the Ford sedan owned by Robertson. They're both accused of murder. He admitted to having an affair with Mamie for nearly 2 years. He was found guilty and sent to the Moundsville prison. But here's where it gets to the good stuff we need for this episode. Mamie's ghost still haunts the mountain road called 22 Mine Road, where her body was dumped. She's said to be seen at the top of the mountain walking along the roadway, but that isn't all. It said that if you park at the bottom of 22 Mine Road and place your car in neutral, it'll roll uphill, that good old paranormal chestnut. And it's Mamie's ghostly hands that push your vehicle. This person that wrote this article said, I've tried it. It works. It's an optical illusion, a mystery hill phenomenon made by the layout of the land. Sure, maybe. But my Jeep rolled a good 10 feet uphill on its own. I still want to believe it's her ghost. All right, not done. Same site. Nearby, the Battle of Droop Mountain was a Civil War battle occurring on November 6th, 1863. It's a raid into Virginia, was disrupted by the, to disrupt the Virginia and Tennessee Railroad at Salem, Virginia. But it came to head on November 6, 1863, one of the largest engagements in West Virginia during the Civil War. The number of men who were killed during the battle is at least 78 men, 45 Union soldiers and 33 Confederate soldiers. And they said this battlefield, this entire battlefield, is haunted. In fact, a retired logger by the name of Edgar Walton, who was returning home from work in 1920 along with his friends, attested to a ghostly presence there. He stopped within what is now known as Droop Mountain State Park to camp for the night. He had just prepared a fire near the small cemetery, which contains the graves of Confederate soldiers killed during the battle, when there was the sound of rustling leaves. He looked up, and to his surprise, he came face to face with the headless apparition of a Confederate soldier floating past. Over the years, other people have reported ghostly reminders of the battle, including screams, sounds of a battle, and seeing spirits of soldiers. All right, that was cool, right? Work was already done for me. I figured, why not just quote from one source? But, well, let's screw it. Let's keep going. Let's do one more. Let's do one more, and then I'm going to call it for the night. Let's go over to Tucker County for this last one. Let's hope it's either brutal or funny, for me anyway. We're going to go to a place in the mountains called Darkish Knob. All right, good chance for brutal or funny. Darkish Knob is, look, yes, I should do a Darkish Knob joke here, but it pretty much writes itself. So let's see if the ghost is a Darkish Knob in the story. Legend says one night a slave girl was riding her horse along the path in search of the safe house, but missed it in the dark. She was trying to, like, basically escape from being a slave, but she missed it in the dark. When she stopped to see if she was still being pursued by, you know, a-holes that were trying to keep her a slave, her horse lost its footing and the pair of them fell from a ledge to their death. People still hear her ghosts here and also hear cries and screams. Wow. Not even not one Darkish Knob in this whole story. Is that it, really? Yeah, no, that's it. People that walk this place called Darkish Knob report seeing a ghost horse and hearing and seeing a ghost woman, but most often hearing her cries and screams. Aw, man, that name sounded so good. Like, the perfect way to end a West Virginia episode is to talk about my Darkish Knob. But I don't know. Look, there was a ton of stuff on here, right? And even more shockingly, like I said, it seems like West Virginia has more ghosts than people. I stopped. I could keep going, but I gotta go eat dinner. And it's been an hour and 28 minutes for this episode. That's a long episode. But West Virginia, man, you do not hold back with your ghost stories. You got a ton of them. Like I said, you can do a whole walking tour of Harper's Ferry. That's incredible. Once again, I'm your host, Kurt Samick, and this has been another edition of Paranormal Almanac. Thank you so much. I hope you guys like this one. Somewhere in the future, I'll do a West Virginia treasure episode.
Hey, you are...